Well, John Boehner and Eric Cantor continue to turn their backs on the long-term unemployed. And when it comes to illegal torture by the CIA, the only American jailed right now is the whistleblower who exposed the torture. What's up with that? Next on the Ground. And welcome to the Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition, where we lift up voices of social justice and activism here in the nation's capital. I'm Esther Rivera, I'm your host, and I want to first thank my brothers in sports, Eitan Thomas and Dave Zirin of The Collision for their show, and also thank you for staying with us. Coming up, activists made a pilgrimage to the U.S. Capitol yesterday to remind elected officials of the millions of Americans who are being denied continued unemployment benefits, and a fundraiser for a CIA whistleblower who has been imprisoned and financially ruined for exposing the agency's illegal and official policy of torture. But before we get to that, first our headlines. In northeastern Nigeria, Boko Haram militants have slaughtered hundreds of people in three villages in Borno State. The gunmen reportedly posed as soldiers arriving to protect the villagers before rounding them up and opening fire. More than 2,000 people have been killed this year alone by Boko Haram, which kidnapped more than 270 schoolgirls in April and recently kidnapped 20 additional women at gunpoint. A variety of protests and strikes, most recently announced by airport workers, are occurring as the FIFA World Cup begins in Brazil. Subway workers suspended a 5-day strike over wages, but warned it could resume in time for today's opening match of the World Cup. A striking teacher, Maria Dolores Fonseca, in Rio de Janeiro summed up the sentiment of many protesters. Quote, "We are showing Brazil and the world that our country needs to invest in healthcare, education, public transportation, and culture, not in stadiums, not in airports," she said. "We need public goods that go to the people, not to FIFA, not to tourists. We want investment that stays here, that stays for the people," end quote. President Obama has announced new steps to ease the $1.2 trillion student debt, noting Americans now owe more money on student loans than on credit cards. Obama's executive order will cap loan payments for millions of people at 10% of monthly income, a so-called pay-as-you-earn model. Hundreds of food service workers rallied at the Capitol protesting yesterday that the hospitality giant Sodexo reclassified about 10,000 employees as part-time, even though they still work full-time hours, but only for the academic year. Sodexo has stripped these workers of access to company health insurance, as well as all other benefits like paid vacations and paid sick days. The Supreme Court has barred a group of North Carolina residents from suing the electronics company they say contaminated their drinking water because a state deadline had lapsed. The deadline applies even though residents did not realize their water contained toxic chemicals until 2009, decades after the contamination by CTS Corporation. The ruling could also impact the case of thousands of Marines and their families who are suing the Obama administration over exposure to contaminated groundwater at Camp Lejeune. The government is using the same state law to shield itself from that lawsuit. A top official at the U.S. Customs and Border Protection Agency has been removed amidst accusations of failing to investigate abuses and deadly shootings by agents on the Mexican border. James Tomczyk was replaced as the CPB's head of internal affairs following a wave of shootings by agents that have killed 29 people since 2010. The victims include at least 6 Mexican nationals killed on the Mexican side of the border. Hundreds of immigrants have filed complaints over alleged abuses, but just 14 cases have led to disciplinary action. Also, widespread abuse of accompanied immigrant children at the hands of U.S. border officials spurred a group of civil and human rights organizations to file a complaint yesterday on behalf of more than 100 children, each of whom reported experiencing abuse and mistreatment while in custody of U.S. Customs and Border Protection, the border enforcement agency within the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. Children detained by CPB across the country have reported scores of examples of verbal, sexual, and physical abuse, prolonged detention in squalid conditions, and severe lack of essential necessities such as beds, food, and water. And speaking of our most vulnerable populations today, June 12th is World Day Against Child Labor, an annual observance established 12 years ago by the UN's International Labor Organization, ILO, to raise awareness about and activism around the issue of child labor, defined as work performed by children who are under the minimum age legally specified for that kind of work, or work which, because of its detrimental nature or conditions, is considered unacceptable for children and is prohibited. 168 million children worldwide are in child labor. 85 million of them are in hazardous work. Underinvestment in children jeopardizes their rights and their future, including their right to be protected from child labor, a recent report said. And finally, in our version of Throwback Thursdays, happenings on this date in June from the past, in 1830, the beginning of the French colonization of Algeria, 34,000 French soldiers land 27 kilometers west of Algiers. In 1982, the UK went into the Battle of Mount Longdon for the Falkland Islands, a half a world away in Argentina. And in 1996, Marge Schott gave up day-to-day operations of Cincinnati's baseball team because of her numerous racist and sexist comments. And those are our headlines. We'll be right back in a minute with more news from protests at the Capitol. And welcome back to the Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment, the on-the-ground edition. I'm Esther Rivera, I'm your host. Well, John Kiriakou, who blew the whistle on CIA torture, is in prison for 30 months, and his family is $30,000 in arrears on their mortgage. To make sure the Kiriakou family save their home, Code Pink and Fire Dog Lake have pledged to raise $30,000 before Father's Day at the fundraising party this Friday at the Code Pink D.C. House. That's at 1241 Everett Street, Northeast in D.C. The groups expect to reach this goal and present a check for $30,000 to the Kiriakou family. John's sister Tina and his three younger children will be in attendance. The host committee includes Medea Benjamin and Jody Evans of Code Pink, James Hampshire of Fire Dog Lake, CIA whistleblower Ray McGovern, Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, Colonel Ann Wright, businessman Andy Shalal, author Phyllis Bennis, and Pentagon Papers whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg. Both Code Pink and Fire Dog Lake think it is critical to show the public gratitude for the sacrifice that John Kiriakou and his family have made. Several hundred people contributed to the $30,000 that will be presented to the family for Father's Day. Joining me to speak about John Kiriakou is Medea Benjamin, founder of Code Pink, which is sponsoring tomorrow's support event. Medea Benjamin is certainly no stranger to the airways of WPFW. She's co-founder of both Code Pink and the international human rights organization Global Exchange. Benjamin is the author of 8 books. Her latest is Drone Warfare, Killing by Remote Control, and she has been campaigning to stop the use of killer drones. Her direct questioning of President Obama during his 2013 foreign policy address, as well as her recent trips to Pakistan and Yemen, helped shine a light on the innocent people killed by U.S. drone strikes. Welcome to On the Ground, Medea.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on.
Well, first, most of our listeners they know you as a serious activist, but they may not know that you can shake it up. I saw you myself on the WPFW boat ride last Friday night and having a good time. It was really good to see you.
It was, and I do love to dance. That was great fun.
All right. Well, when many of our listeners hear the word whistleblower, they think now about Edward Snowden. But where does John Kiriakou fit into this realm of whistleblowers?
Well, this under the Obama administration, there have been numerous people who've come out to speak out against abuses, both during the Bush administration and under Obama. And this administration has gone after them viciously. And one of them is John Kiriakou. He worked for the CIA for many years. And when he left, he spoke out against the use of torture. And in 2007, the government went after him viciously and has found one of those side issues to pin on him, which was accusing him in an interview in the media of having released the name of a CIA agent. And with that, he had to do a plea bargain because he was afraid that he would get some really decades-long sentence. He has 3 young children, 2 other children from a previous marriage, and so he plea bargained and got 30 months. He has been serving now 1.5 years at the Federal Correction Institute in Loretto, Pennsylvania. He's been away from his wife and his family, and I think it's very sad that our community has not raised his profile more. And when we found out that his family had been behind for many months now in paying the mortgage because of the lack of John's income, we thought it was important that we get together as a community and say we will not let this whistleblower and his family lose their home.
Right. I actually saw one account that said that the family had actually lost their home, but that hasn't happened yet, right?
No, that hasn't happened, and it's not going to happen. And
right.
We've been really heartened by the response from the community. And I think we have to do this with our whistleblowers. You know, there are people like Thomas Drake who blew the whistle on the NSA early on, and he is now working in an Apple store. There's nothing wrong with working in an Apple store. He's a brilliant analyst. There is Peter Van Buren, who blew the whistle in the State Department on the use of our money in the abuses of contractors in Iraq.
Right.
He was gone after, and for a while he was working in a Michaels. Again, nothing wrong with that, but a brilliant analyst, a brilliant writer.
Right.
And we're not giving enough support to our whistleblowers and not shaming the administration enough for going after these people.
Right. So my understanding is that of all the people who did the torture, ordered the torture, oversaw the torture, none of those people have been prosecuted or jailed. But the whistleblower, he's the only one in jail for exposing what they did.
Well, right. And I think it goes back to that terrible mistake of President Obama, who said we're going to look forward and not looking backwards, whether it's around prosecuting people who took us to war in Iraq, and look what's happening, the disaster in Iraq today, or it's about prosecuting the people that got us into the indefinite detention and torture that blemishes the image of the United States and so harms the individual. And think about the torture report that has been laboriously done by the Senate Intelligence Committee, over 6,000 pages. We, the public, have still not been able to see that. So not only have people not been prosecuted, but the issues have not been allowed to see the light of day for the public to get an understanding of just what has been done in our name. And yet, yes, somebody like John Kiriakou is the one to suffer the consequences for speaking out.
Right. Okay, so that's tomorrow. The event will be at the Code Pink D.C. House, 1241 Everett Street, Northeast Washington, D.C. And I know for more information, people can go to codepink.org, right?
Yes, and they can go to the Facebook page for the event, which is support a Father's Day event for CIA whistleblower John Kiriakou. And we would love for the community to come out. We are asking for a $50 donation, but if you don't have the funds and want to show support, come on over.
Okay, great. So that's tomorrow, and you have all the information. That Facebook page is kind of long. It's Father's Day event.
I think if you just Google John Kiriakou Father's Day event,
you'll get it. Okay.
Would, Find it right away. And as you also said, you can get it from Code Pink, and also the whistleblower.org organization has it up.
Okay, great. I've been speaking to Medea Benjamin, co-founder of Code Pink. Thanks for taking the time to join us today. I know you're busy.
Thanks so much for having me on. I hope you're going to come tomorrow night.
I will definitely be there.
Oh, terrific.
Okay.
Great.
Okay, so when we come back, a pilgrimage to raise the voices of those cut off from unemployment benefits. And after that, taking your comments on unemployment, on Congress's failure to extend unemployment benefits at the bottom of the hour. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. I'm Esther Rivera, I'm your host. Yesterday, 50 members of the faith community were at the U.S. Capitol in a pilgrimage to support the unemployed. They were there to raise the voices of the unemployed who have lost support due to the unwillingness of the House of Representatives to consider the extended unemployment compensation bill passed in the Senate last December. But some of these same legislators have been voting to continue expending billions of dollars through tax loopholes benefiting corporations and the very wealthy. Those gathered read stories from people around the country, and those stories are the same as people who are right here in the DMV who are suffering, losing homes, cars, getting by on SNAP, food stamps, donations, and struggling to find money for transportation to get to a job interview. So here is one of those who made the pilgrimage, Kelly Wilkins, reading a letter sent by an unemployed veteran yesterday. It was recorded as she was walking, so the sound dips a little, but here is some sound from the pilgrimage yesterday. All right.
I only have a little bit of money left to support my family of three. Unemployment benefits are currently in college trying to reinvent myself, because I can't find a job in my surrounding area. I have 24 years of business experience with 11 years of management. Also, I've been in the military for 16 years. Please pass the unemployment benefit bill as soon as possible. I will not be able to pay my bills in June. There's a few other words I would like to express to John Boehner, but it would be unprofessional, and I am a professional. Thank you very much for letting me share my story.
Okay, that was a bit of sound from yesterday's pilgrimage in support of the unemployed at the Capitol. With me this morning to talk about the pilgrimage is one of the organizers, Sister Marge Clark, who works as a lobbyist on domestic human needs at NETWRC, a national Catholic social justice lobby. She has over 30 years experience in higher education teaching teachers. This follows some years in elementary school teaching. She is also actively engaged in work to close the School of Americas and involved in work around corporate responsibility. Yesterday's action was sponsored by the Interreligious Working Group on Domestic Human Needs and the Washington Interfaith Staff Community. Also with me is Howie Levine. He's legislative assistant with the Religious Action Center of Reform Judaism, the Washington, D.C. Office of the Reform Jewish Movement. Welcome to you both. Thanks for joining me here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I hear a little something in my headphones, but okay. All right. So let's start with yesterday's pilgrimage, where these messages were read. Kind of recreate a little for us what happened yesterday.
Okay. Yesterday, we actually followed a weekly event that started yesterday that's called Witness Wednesdays. So every Wednesday between now and the end of July, there will be a reading of these stories outside the Capitol on what's called the Triangle. And many legislators and other people in leadership positions around the district are reading those stories. At the end of that, we began to organize and go over to the Cannon House office building, and we set up a route where we were visiting the offices of 12 legislators who a much larger group has been really pushing to bring up and to pass legislation to extend unemployment benefits to the long-term unemployed. So we went up and we started walking through, and as we were walking, and as you just heard, as we were walking through these buildings, People were reading stories. The rest of us were all in absolute silence as a sacred pilgrimage. We went through the Cannon Building, then we went through some offices in Longworth, and then some offices in the Rayburn Building. And we stopped at the offices of these 12 people, and we dropped off copies of the stories of people from their own home districts,
okay,
and a letter from the faith group really pointing out what a very serious social justice issue this is, that this is really a moral issue.
So these members of Congress received letters from people in their own district. Wow.
The letters were sent into a couple of groups in the area who requested stories.
Mm-hmm.
They may or may not have been, we gave them to the legislator offices.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
Wow, okay. So what is the scope of the problem? I know that when the Senate passed their legislation, it was impacting perhaps 2 million people. And I think it's up to 3.5 now, is that right?
It's well over 3 million. In fact, while we were at the Witness Wednesdays, there was someone standing there with a huge sign of the numbers, and about every 15 minutes they tore off another sheet that showed the number of people who had lost their jobs in that 15-minute period, or lost their benefits in that 15-minute period.
And about every 3 months that the unemployment benefits go unextended, another million unemployed workers and their families go without these crucial benefits.
Right. So I think there's also a particular urgency to now. I was reading one report that talked about how the actual legislation passed by the Senate has some type of expiration date recently.
Yes, so it expired the end of May. It was a provision for 5 months. And, of course, it never went into effect because the House would not take it up. So these people never got the extended benefits. So they have not had any income since December 28th. Of this past year.
Okay. So what we want to do is, just as we heard Kelly Wilkins on the sound from yesterday, we wanted you to have an opportunity to read some of the stories. And I was wondering, are they presented anonymously, or do you evoke the name of the person?
Some of them have a first name on them, some of them don't, and they do have, for the most part, they have the city that they're from.
Okay. You want to share one? Want to start, Howie?
Sure.
Okay.
So this is from Los Angeles, California. I lost my job in July 2013. My unemployment was cut in February, and I got an eviction notice from the court today. My car payment is 2 months behind, and I failed to keep insurance up on the vehicle. I am terrified that I might have to live in a shelter on Skid Row, the very same place that I was laid off from after serving the homeless by trying to help them find housing, as this is a huge problem in downtown Los Angeles. My cell phone bill is due to be cut off in 2 days, and I have no idea how an employer will be able to contact me if I am selected to interview for a job. I now get $187 in food stamps. I never seem to make it to the end of the month and run out of food. I really need this unemployment benefits, for I found an agency who will pay my back rent only if I can show them income, which they confirmed that the unemployment insurance would suffice. Please extend unemployment. We really need it to survive. Put yourself in our shoes. We are about to be evicted onto the streets.
Wow. So that's from Los Angeles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Did any of the organizations kind of have any more interaction with the people submitting the stories, or just allowed?
I believe some did, because some of the organizations involved have on the ground organizations that are service organizations in various areas. Yes.
Okay. So, Sister Marge, would you like to read a story?
Yes, I have a story from Faye in Laurel Springs, New Jersey. My job as a breast cancer coordinator ended when funding ended. My main duty was helping uninsured women obtain a free or low-cost mammogram. I myself am a 10-year breast cancer survivor, and I loved this job. My husband and I both worked for the same company and lost our positions 3 months apart. Right now, we're barely surviving in this Social Security, but we are very proud people and refuse to ask for a handout. We will be losing our home of 33 years, where we raised 3 sons and 1 grandchild. We just sold our car, to make next month's payment, and we buy what food we can from Walmart. We are not complaining, just living day by day and trusting God. For the record, my husband and I have never been unemployed in 42 years of marriage. We realize that there are many people who are in much worse position than us, but mostly I think about the children and how they suffer. I remember as a child watching my parents struggle, and the day my father left and we had to go on welfare. My mother hated every minute of what she perceived to be charity, and I vowed never to go that route. Please, if for no other reason, help the children who did not sign up for this. Think about employing some of the long-term unemployed to help with reinstating benefit paperwork. Think about creating a special program for those who are too young to retire or too old to get hired. I really hope someone will read this and take into consideration what this country really stands for and stands out for other countries.
Wow. And that was Faye from New Jersey.
That was Faye from New Jersey.
Okay. Do you have another story?
Sure. Mm-hmm. This is from Denver, Colorado. I'm facing homelessness. Not being able to pay your rent at 44 years of age is beyond embarrassing. I have worked since I was 14 years old, and this is the first time my situation is this dire. There is relatively little to eat in my house. I can't drive to look for work because of the gas and insurance that I can no longer afford. My internet will be shut off pretty soon, so there goes just one more way of job searching that will be just a bit harder, as there are constantly lines at the public library to use the computers. Then I will take my 30 minutes of time to look for something, anything really, so I can redeem myself in the eyes of my children, and mostly in my own eyes, to be a worthwhile, contributing, tax-paying American citizen. It's terrible that we are causing such hardship to people, and the worst hit won't even write to you because they don't know how, they don't have a computer, or they don't think it would do any good. Please help me and others who are even worse off get the unemployment benefits we were promised.
Okay, and so that was from Denver, Colorado. Okay. All right. So what are some of the other activities that you want to mention involved with this campaign?
Thank you. There's a large group of people from various and sundry agencies all over the nation who are working to try to get these benefits in place, because it is such a serious, serious issue. It's not going to go away. These people are starving. They're losing their homes. It's not going anyplace. So some of the things that are happening is there's a group of us who have phone calls several times a week. In fact, a few weeks ago, we were calling and talking with each other every day about organizing. There's tweeting going on. Some of the tweeting that we're doing is directed toward particular legislators. For instance, on one given day, the tweets might be directed toward Representative Boehner. On another day, to someone else. And so almost every day, there are tweets directed to some member of Congress who is opposing this or not letting it go through. Various organizations are also taking responsibility for organizing things in local districts around the nation. So they might be having a press conference in one place on one day. Another group might do some kind of an action at the Capitol in another state. So there are different things going on with people all the time. And then I mentioned already the Witness Wednesdays that began yesterday and will be every Wednesday through July, with the exception of July 2nd. And then, of course, there was the pilgrimage yesterday.
Okay. Okay, great. I've been speaking with Sister Marge Clark and also Harry Levine. And we've been talking about the pilgrimage that they were both on yesterday to support the unemployed, the long-term unemployed, yesterday at the U.S. Capitol. And so when we come back, it's your turn. You know, this is Community Watch and Comment, and we welcome your calls to 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893 to comment on the fact that House Republicans are refusing to extend unemployment benefits to millions of Americans. You know, and your comments on this political landscape that has allowed them to ignore their own constituencies. The number to call again is 202-588-0893. We're going to take a brief break, and we have a few announcements, but when we come back, we'll go to the phones.
All public broadcast stations receiving funds from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, or CPB, are required by law to have a Community Advisory Board, or CAB. The function of WPFW-CAB is to review the station's programming goals, the services provided by the station, and any significant policy decisions made by the station, and to serve as a vehicle for the community to effectively provide input to the local station board. To that end, the community is invited to offer feedback in any of these areas by emailing the CAB at cab.wpfw@mail.com. That's cab.wpfw@mail.com. WPFW, serving 100% of the 99.
Welcome back to the Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment, the on-the-ground edition, where we lift the voices of social activism and social justice. During the first half of the show, we discussed a movement to aid CIA whistleblower John Kiriakou and a pilgrimage yesterday to the offices of Congress to raise the voices of the long-term unemployed. Now it's your turn, so you can call 202-588-0893 to comment on either of these issues. Republicans refusing to extend unemployment benefits to millions of Americans, and a political landscape that has allowed them to ignore their own constituencies. So what do you have to say? 202-588-0893 is the number to call and weigh in on today's conversation. Continuing with me in the studio is one of the organizers of yesterday's action, Sister Marge Clark, who works as a lobbyist on domestic human needs at NETWRC, a National Catholic Social Justice Lobby. And also with me is Howie Levine, a legislative assistant with the Religious Action Center of Reform Judaism, the Washington, D.C. office. So we'll continue with our guests in the studio as you call to 202-588-0893. Now, I was actually curious about being there yesterday after this news came out about Eric Cantor, because, you know, the thing is, from what I understand, it's because he and Boehner won't even let it come to a vote. I mean, they won't even call the vote. I mean, this is some type of arcane bureaucratic situation where they know that the House would probably pass this legislation. It seems criminal. It's criminal to me.
The information that we have indicates that there are plenty of votes in the House to get this passed. Many of us have been visiting many offices of Congress over the last year or so talking about this issue. And yes, there are the votes, and they just have to bring it to the floor for a vote.
Is it just Boehner and Cantor? I mean, is it in a certain committee, and then those committee persons could be targeted, or?
Those two people have control of what goes to the floor, to the schedule of the floor.
Wow.
There's great support for it in their own districts. There's great support for it.
All right, so all the more reason for why he lost yesterday. Okay. Oh wow, that's crazy. So you know what, Howie, what led you to be involved and want to be involved in the event yesterday?
Great. So, working for my organization, we work on behalf of the values, the beliefs of Reform Judaism. And as Jews, our tradition teaches that one of the highest forms of justice, or tzedakah, is to help another person achieve self-sufficiency. And as we've talked about with these stories, these are hardworking Americans that really need these benefits to get them between jobs, help them look for work. We know how hard it is out there today. And just doing anything we can and bringing those stories to the members of Congress, to their offices, making sure they know that this isn't just some theoretical issue. These are hardworking Americans that are in their districts.
Right. 202-588-0893 is the number to call to weigh in on today's edition of Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. I think we have our first caller. Just tell me your first name and where you're calling from. Hello?
Hi, this is Reverend Christina Hemlin. I'm Director of the Ecumenical Poverty Initiative based in Washington, D.C., and had the privilege of being a part of the action yesterday with Sister Marge Clark and Brother Howie.
Okay. And what do you like to weigh in terms of add to the conversation today? I understand that, you know, a lot of people... They have this idea that the unemployed are just kind of sitting home watching soap operas or, you know, watching the game and chilling out and not really looking for work. But everybody who's counted as unemployed is actually still looking for work, right?
That is exactly correct. They are still looking for work. And as an organization that is a network of denominations as well as state ecumenical councils, which of course then also represents churches, we recognize that not only are they looking for work, but because these benefits were not extended, then they go into a place of hopelessness. And what we have found is that it's gotten to the point that even some of our state ecumenical council partners and churches are having to then provide care for their parishioners in such a way that that they're going through a significant loss and depression.
Right.
People assume that people do not want to work, but in actuality, they do want to work. Part of the issue is jobs, not that the labor force does not want jobs.
Right. And then, of course, there's the issue that even if their jobs open, that you have, what, tens or hundreds of, you know, I don't remember the exact ratio now, but, you know, a lot of people competing for one job or applying for that one job. So it may not, you know, everyone can't fill the job and everyone can't, have the skills necessarily for that job. So, okay. And so you're saying that the churches are also kind of bearing a lot of the burden, or, you know, different, denominations, people who are caring for their congregations, they are kind of picking up the slack for these lack of benefits.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And so then it becomes important for us to begin to tell those stories of people who have lost these benefits, because as we believe, the Bible tells us that we are to bear witness. We are to plead the cause of those that are in need, as well as to tell about what's going on in their lives.
Okay. Well, I thank you so much for calling. There's a lot of kind of scratchiness on the line. If you're able to call back, please do. And I don't know if that's movement or what it is, but I hope you can. If you can call back, maybe we can get a better connection. Thank you so much. Okay. Now, what about this whole issue, Sister Marge, of people looking for work, but you know, their skills don't match the job openings in their area, and they go to apply for a job and they see that there are like dozens of people there. Did you see that in the stories that you read?
Absolutely. There, so many of the stories talked about that they might even come in second on a job, but they would find out that there had been 50 or 60 or 100 people. Many of these people are extremely skilled. There are people in media, there are people in all walks of life, and what's happening is a lot of companies are just simply cutting back on the numbers.
Right.
And for many things, one of the reasons they're cutting back on their numbers of employees is that their product isn't selling because there aren't enough people who have enough money to buy their products.
Right. It's a consumer-driven economy. I was just in a conversation with someone about that, and so many jobs that have benefits, you know, they're either being eliminated or they're being cut back. And so is there another story that you have or that you've read that is very, you know, poignant to you that you want to share?
Sure. I have a story from Eric in South Grafton, Massachusetts. Eric had been working for the post office for quite a number of years. So I'm just going to retell his story. My wife, my two daughters, and myself were living, barely, off unemployment. I was a postal worker for years and lost my position in April. It's been about 2.5 months now since I've received any income. We have sold off everything of value just to stay afloat. Now my car insurance got cut off. I find it near impossible to now look for work since I live at least a 15-minute drive to the closest area of business. So you don't think of me during this debate. Please think of my children. My wife and I have been trying so hard not to break down in front of them and cry, and have been trying so hard to keep this family together. We are both at our ends, and our families have helped, but they're running out of extra financial support. Please help with saving my family, along with 3 million others who are feeling like me. I think one of the things that came through in many, many stories is how many of these people are selling everything they had. They're losing their homes, they're selling their cars, they're selling their furniture, they're selling every possession. They have gone through savings, they have gone through their children's college funds, they have gone through everything that they could get their hands on, and they've been getting help from their families, their extended families, as much as possible, but those families are now out of money.
Right, right. It kind of reminds me of the crash in 2008 when there were so many reports about foreclosures, and not just reports, but we could see in terms of our neighborhoods, our cities, so many people losing their homes, and it just seemed to me kind of like a just kind of stripping people away from everything that they had, and you know, they were back at zero, you know, in terms of everything they had tried to build up. 202-588-0893 is the number to call Community Watch and Comment. This morning we're talking about, you know, unemployment and the fact that the House Republicans have failed to renew unemployment insurance for millions of Americans, and the fact that people are having such hardships, and not only that this story has become kind of like a non-story, like these people become invisible almost, right? Like you never see a family. It's become a non-story almost, like, you know, almost like kind of gun shootings becoming normal or something. Anyway, it's horrible. 202-588-0893 is the number to call. I have a couple of callers on the line. A caller, just say your first name and where you're calling from.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead. You're on the air. Just say your first name and where you're calling from.
Nita. I'm calling from Laurel, Maryland.
Okay.
And my thing is, why doesn't the people of the state of where Boehner is and the other young man is, why don't they just recall them, go up there and take over their office? Because this is mind-boggling. Mm-hmm. Here, a man probably don't have anything to worry about as far as feeding his family, because the money he's getting is being a senator, and the other thing they get is being a senator.
I think they're actually
this nation is in trouble with God, mm-hmm. and they need to come to realize the Bible teaches us what you do to the least of those. You do it to God. And a banger better watch the step, because that's wrong. It is wrong to deny people the means of survival. They have cut back on food stamps to those people. They have cut out everything to help the people of this nation. And it is sad. It is really sad.
Okay. Thank you, Nita, for calling. 202-588-0893 is the number to call to weigh in on today's conversation. I have one other caller on the line. Just say your first name and where you're calling from.
This is from Sakina Hamlin from the Ecumenical Poverty Initiative in D.C., calling back in with a better line.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Okay. And of the stories that you have, you know, actually, you know, either read or, you know, shared yourself, do you want to share one with us that, you know, has stayed with you?
Sure. Actually, I have a couple of stories that have stayed with me. One from a mother-to-be who is pregnant and tells about the fact that she cries every night wondering how she's going to make ends meet. I have a personal story of a parishioner when I was pastoring a year ago who was a grandparent and raising their grandchildren and lost their job and was not able to get unemployment insurance any longer and therefore even had me doing more pastoral care with him as he searched for a job, but forced to be in a situation of hopelessness because he needed to provide for his family, which then therefore included his grandchildren as well. I think of some stories that I read yesterday from West Virginia with people who had to sell their car, people who were losing their homes to foreclosure, people who still had to make decisions about food and how they were going to feed their children. And so no longer is it just a situation of income, but it's also people who are using the very base that they build their wealth on, the wealth for their families in terms of their homes, and being evicted from their apartments because of this. I think for us at the Ecumenical Poverty Initiative, we see this as a place where we have to raise the voice of the people. The Bible tells us to bear witness that people cannot be silent, that our legislators cannot think that they are invisible. People want to work, and we want to be able to have them work. And so for our network, which includes denominations as well as state ecumenical councils, thus churches and pastors and parishioners, it was important for us to be a part of the events yesterday.
Okay, wonderful. 202-588-0893 is the number to call to weigh in on our conversation today. I was really struck by some of the things that Nita said, called in from Laurel. And, you know, what about that? I mean, you know, what kind of activity is happening in Boehner's home district and Cantor's home district? Well, we know what's happening in Cantor's home district. They just threw him out. But how about Boehner? I mean, is there any, do you have any, like, satellite offices or campaigns there to put some fire under him?
Well, Network has a lot of interaction with his district, actually. I don't know if you're familiar with Nuns on the Bus. But
yes,
we are the generators of Nuns on the Bus, and we have an Ohio Nuns on the Bus group. And they spend a lot of time in his district talking with his staff there about all of the same issues that Nita brought up.
Right.
His happens to be a fairly wealthy district, and there are certainly pockets of people in poverty, mm-hmm. but I think he has much more contact and is much more aware of the people who really don't need the help. And I'm not sure he gets that many stories from his own district.
Right, right. Well, yeah, I know that those nuns on the bus can be pretty intimidating, so they need to just turn up the heat on Boehner. Okay, 202-588-0893 is the number to call. Caller, just say your first name and where you're calling from.
Well, my first name is Tanika, and I'm calling from Southeast BC.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I went through this economic downturn, and it really hit me really hard. So when I hear the stories, I'm just sitting here in my heart praying, because I know what it's like to not really understand how you're going to make ends meet. And my question is, okay, so you go through and you get this extension passed for unemployment income, and then my question is, so what then? You know, if they extend it for a year, what do we do within the year to ensure that when that time is up, that people are able to make ends meet at that point? Or do we have a perpetual problem? And I said it because when, you know, the economic downturn first happened, I remember reading the cover of Time magazine, and it mentioned a jobless market recovery, you know, kind of sending this weird signal that the jobs that were lost in 08, they're like, you know, the structure of America's job market has forever been changed, and we're not recovering in the way that you thought before. So with those factors being in play, what does one do to really solve the problem, and would the extension do that?
Wow, yeah. I mean, I think the questions you raise are really important and really key, and I think that, you know, we'll throw them to our guests, but we'll also just talk about that because, you know, this is obviously just one part of a bigger puzzle about, you know, economic, you know, development, you know, how people can, you know, the structure of our economy in general. So I thank you so much, Tamika, for that call. So I'll throw it to our guests. This is Sister Marge.
Hi.
Hi, Levine.
I think your question is a very, very good one. And I think the answer is much broader than anything to do with unemployment insurance. I think if you look around our nation and think about all of the things in our nation that current generations have inherited from those who came before us, if you look at roads, if you look at all kinds of bridges, hundreds of bridges have been called unsafe. Well, even that little bit of work that really desperately needs to be done, because we're handing off unsafe things to the next generation so that a few people at the top of our economic ladder can have more profit that they don't know what to do with. And even taking on bridges would be so many different kinds of jobs.
Right.
It would be engineers, it would be designers, it would be anything you can imagine, as well as the on-the-ground people who do the physical labor.
Right.
There are so many things that need to be done. We've talked for years about getting more good Wi-Fi and good internet available in all schools across the country and doing much more with that. That's not happened as it needs to happen.
Right, right. So in other words, you know, like kind of point 2.0 is like, you know, more jobs, and the fact that there are certainly so many things that need to be done that there's no reason why we can't create good jobs.
Right.
Yeah.
There is one reason. Mm-hmm. And that one reason is that too many people around the nation have been taught the line that taxes are bad, that they are a burden. And yet, look at the things that you value, that you benefit from on an everyday basis.
Right.
And the reason those are available is because people pay taxes. There is revenue. We need more revenue. Yeah. And right now, they're looking at cutting more and more of the revenue, particularly from very wealthy corporations.
Right. Yeah. I know that was part of your bio in terms of corporate responsibility. So I know that you're keen on that issue, and you know, so both of these issues are combined, because when you talk about taxes, for example, we do pay taxes, but where are our taxes going? You know, there's like a huge percentage of our taxes that have gone for war and for military and all that in recent years. So I think the last figure I saw was something like 40%.
No, it's more like 54%.
Wow. So
of the discretionary budget.
Right. So if someone calls in, you know, we do have a couple more minutes if you want to call in at 202-588-0893. We want to make sure that we let the community know, let our listeners know that this is your time. And so I want to make sure I repeat that number. You know, we are winding up our show today, and I want to thank Sister Marge Clark and also Howie Levine. But also, I mean, did you have something you want to say?
I was just going to say, in addition to what Marge was saying about the government trying to create jobs, right now a huge problem in why we are seeing the ratio is 3-1 for every job opening there is. There's 3 people that are qualified and applying nationwide. There's also problems with where those jobs are. But a large problem with that is that the government kind of austerity that is helping create a big deficit for those jobs that hasn't bounced back.
Right.
And additionally, any job growth that we are seeing, you might hear people talking, oh no, we're back to the job numbers we were at before the recession. But the jobs that we're getting back are basically only low-wage, low benefit jobs that aren't really helpful to prevent these dire situations that we find so many people in right now. Sister Marge and I are working a lot on the minimum wage, trying to raise that so that you can work one job and get by, which is really a crucial issue for our society economically.
Okay. Well, thank you again, both Sister Marge Carthel, Harry Levine, and all our callers today, Nita, you know, the pastor, you know, we had a number of callers that, and I really appreciate that. And that'll do it for me for the Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment. Special thanks to Mike Nasella on the board this morning, and thank you so much for listening or calling in and supporting through our recent fund drive. You can reach the show at onthegroundshow.org. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at On the Ground Show. Stay tuned for the news with Askia Muhammad and Krista Property with Don't Forget the Blues, followed by the D.C. Politics Hour with Eugene DeWitt Kinlow, and then the Power Hour with Tashuna Spencer. Someone called them wanting that address for the event tomorrow. And you can go and get all the information at codepink.org, also on Facebook. And, yes, anyway, so peace.